going to read now from Matthew chapter 25, from verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right, and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison or go to visit you?" The king will reply, "I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me." They also will answer, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you?" And he will reply, "I tell you the truth, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life.
Good morning again.
Morning.
I just want to say I was most encouraged by Thursday night's prayer meeting. It was...
Quite something.
Yes. I was challenged and humbled, really, as we were calling people to pray about an evangelist. You know, it's said that when God is about to do something, he first stirs his people to pray. And it was clear that we had a stirring evident in the lives of so many of our congregation to pray. One of the themes that also came out was a call to consecrating ourselves to lives worthy of our call. And so it's timely that we're looking at this passage today as it speaks of one of the aspects of the consecrated life. It's a very challenging passage. You know, this morning we're celebrating harvest. It's been a good to see the gifts of food that we can give to the food collective, and we're also supporting the BMS appeal for South Sudan conflict survivors. If you go to the BMS website, you can find much more about this worthy cause. In it, there's a piece by a Baptist minister from Essex who shares his experience of visiting Sudan. And he relates some of his thoughts about how about this scripture that we have this morning. He also tells of an incident from the life of St. Martin of Tours. That was in the 4th century saint, St. Martin. He tells an incident from his life that I found really quite inspiring. And I'll tell you a bit about that later. But let's first turn to our scripture. Don't you find this the most uncomfortable saying? I certainly do. But it comes straight from the lips of Jesus. It's not a parable as such, but a metaphor explaining what it's going to be like at the final judgment. And it's very clear from our passage that Jesus anticipates a judgment and a separation. Here the Good Shepherd says that there will be a separation in the flock. Just take a moment to imagine Jesus on Judgment Day, separating people like a shepherd parting the sheep from the goats. It's disturbing, isn't it? I certainly find it disturbing, the emphasis on good works. And I confess, I have really preached on it, because I like to preach encouraging words of good news. But Jesus didn't shy away from saying that the good news reflects a balance in his creation and his world. Whatever you did for the least of these. Well, what have I done? What have you done? Well, I've sometimes given to people I've seen on the street. Not very often, I have to say. I've put some money in the box today for the collection. And from time to time, I also do stuff like that. And in fact, one time I went to Namibia for a few weeks for a charity. But I still find myself asking the question. If I look at the scales, the good things I've done and the things I haven't bothered to done, how good's my score? I'm not really very sure that it's very, very good. Maybe it will swing in an undesirable direction. But it has to be said, no one can erase their sins through good deeds. So it's not the good deeds that actually get me into Jesus' good books. Jesus, who knew no sin, became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God. It's comforting that I can only be judged by my faith in him. And there's some familiar texts, passages from Ephesians. It is by grace you've been saved through faith. And this not from yourselves, it is the gift of God. Romans 10 verse 9, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. I touched my screen and my sermon's gone.
Hey! Preach it.
Well, in fact, it's my next Bible passage is gone as well, which is even harder. There we go. And 2 Corinthians 5. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. So how do we square those texts that talk about just our trust in Jesus with this text where Jesus is very clearly saying to us, what have you done? Well, perhaps we can get some insight from James. James chapter 2, verse 17. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe there is one God? Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? And that's consistent with the Old Testament, which shows that God's heart for widows and orphans, the hungry and the poor. Being part of God's family means taking care of those who need help. This pastor from Essex went to Sudan a few years ago. On his first visit, He was at a pastor's conference at the Baptist Convention of South Sudan, and they were introducing Jesus to people through solid Bible teaching. Then a year later, these same pastors became refugees themselves. And on a second visit, this pastor was able to go and see those same ministers, but not in the context of a biblical conference, but in a refugee camp, helping the needy, bringing food and comfort. And they were able to do some of that because of the support of BMS, which we've seen very briefly in that video. And as Susan said, if you want to find out more, you can go onto the Baptist website. There's some very moving things on their video about what's happening in that refugee camp. But these people, their life was transformed because they had to do something for those around them. You know, it was their mission to make their faith work, and that was something that really touched this pastor. And I think as I've looked at the video, it's touched me. I have watched a longer video, and some of it is really quite moving. And one of the various stories in it. Actually, before I talk about that, what must have been nearly it might have been 20 years ago, I went to Zimbabwe, and we were just coming back from where my brother is in Inyanga, quite near the Mozambique border, and we were driving back to Harare, and on this hill, and we saw to the side this mass of huts. And yet I'd kind of thought as a refugee camp, as a kind of nice, well-ordered thing, maybe not quite like a war prisoner of war camp, you know, with rows of huts, taps at the end, some latrines and so on. But actually, a refugee camp was just a sprawling mass of huts and things with thousands and thousands of people in it. It just completely opened my eyes to what a refugee camp really is like. It's not just a like an ordinary temporary home. You know, it's not like going on a holiday camp or something, all the facilities provided. There's people gone to a place that presumably wasn't very well populated, so it gives a sign about how good a place it is to live, and they've had to scratch a life out of those places. And that's what we see in this video from Sudan. A sprawling area of huts. And I thought it was interesting looking at that video. There was an area where some people were growing some very lush-looking maize or corn, whatever it was, some stuff. But actually, when you looked at the larger site, there isn't a lot of room for that corn to be grown. There isn't much for those people to live on. And they have the children who are starving, hungry, wailing for food, trying to find something to eat. And they go off looking for something to eat. And one of the stories in the video is how when these BMS people first went there, they found a boy tied to a tree. I thought that's just so terrible that he was tied to the tree. But then they found his mother, and she'd tied him to the tree because he had learning disabilities. And when he was hungry, he'd wander off to try and find food. And on one occasion, she spent 2 days hunting through this refugee camp to find her son. Later on in the video, they've actually got the picture of this woman with her 3 children, and the boy's not tied up. He's actually had enough food. He's not in a state where he's wanting to go off wandering, trying to find a scrap of food somewhere. That's the difference that our giving to these causes can make. That families can stay together. They're probably still not, well, they're evidently not eating as well as we do. Even when we're fasting, I reckon even when I was fasting in a week, my one meal a day was bigger than many of these people were getting. But they had enough, and it wasn't breaking up their families. So I'm just so grateful the people who've actually gone out there to help, and that we're able to make a small contribution by giving something to them. You know, it's a challenge. Now, Frank was talking about nurturing our relationship with God, our intimacy with Him. And that intimacy needs to grow into a humble, loving, sacrificial service to others. He wants to transform our lives from within. So that's the challenge for us today. It's Jesus' challenge, isn't it? Let's just read that passage again. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. Then a king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father. Come, you who are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did you see a stranger invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The King of Glory will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of my brothers of mine, you did for me. I have to be honest here, I quite like to stop at that point and think I've probably done a bit and Jesus is pleased. But actually Jesus didn't stop, did he? Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you did not look after me. Now I pray that he will soften my heart to just respond to those words. And to have that alertness, I just blessed by Jill and taking the opportunity to find a way of extending some of God's love to her colleagues at work. Just finding a way to do something for people around us. Maybe they don't want to talk much about their needs, but so many of the people around us have got needs, and God is looking to us to help them. Just coming back to Martin of Tours then. He was the son of a Roman general, and he became a Christian at a young age, and more or less following in the family service, joined the Roman army, and he was stationed in Gaul. And the story is told of one occasion when he came across a beggar. Without clothes on the side of the street. And as he came across him, he thought he had to do something for him. And he tore his cloak in half and gave it to this beggar. A little thing that he could do for him. And then that night he had a dream. And in that dream, Jesus was there in heaven with a cloak on, half a cloak on. And one of the angels said to him, Jesus, where did you get that cloak? And Jesus replied, my friend Martin gave it to me. Now, I'd have thought that was a cracking story for someone to become a Christian, but actually, he was now grown up in the army. He became a Christian when he was quite young. But he had that encouragement knowing that Jesus recognised what he was doing. You know, yesterday I was easily distracted when I'm trying to preach. but I was reading a story of some young men in Calgary. They intervened to stop a crime. There was about four of them, and they stopped some men who looked like they were going to abuse a woman. And later they were phoned up, and they got these phone calls, and they were so frightened they didn't want to answer the phone calls because they thought the person that they'd intervened had found out where they were and was going to come and deal with them. When they finally answered the phone, it was the mayor of Calgary inviting them to a meeting, where a gala where the people who'd made a special contribution to the society in Calgary were celebrated for what they'd done. So these four young men had done something, and they were invited to a gala. And you know, when they got there, people just stood them up and said, what a great thing they've done. And we've seen that in our own community. People who have been invited to community gala in Swindon, even being recognised by the Queen for their service to our community. It's really great, isn't it? To be recognised for doing something. But it's not that we can earn salvation by our works. We know that. But that we can consecrate our lives so that we have a faith that works. Today we can make a contribution to the lives of needy people in Swindon and in South Sudan through our donations. That's one thing we can do. We can give something out of the goodness of what we've given to. But secondly, we can listen to the promptings of God's Spirit within us to respond when we see a need before us. You know, for Martin, he had a vision of heaven and he heard Jesus' words. But that's not just a fanciful idea that Jesus will recognise and reward us for what we do. We turn to Matthew 16, verse 24. Jesus said, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory." And don't we look forward to that day when the Son of Man comes in his Father's glory with the angels, and then he will reward each person according to what he has done. You know, this story is really confirmation of what Jesus has already said he's going to do. He's going to reward his faithful servants. And that's why I find this story of Martin of Tours so inspiring. You know, let us live our lives that we will receive that commendation of Jesus. So like Martin, we might hear the words, "My friend Martin did this for me." Perhaps you could put your name in that sentence. "My friend Lilith did this for me. My friend Crispin did this for me." I'm not going to go through the whole congregation, but just take a moment. "My friend did this for me." And Jesus will say that with love and joy in his heart, as he rewards each person according to what he has done. We thank God for his word.